Cetis labis.
Fitulis in lefabilis, membris la cetis labis. Si! Come con tu bello laborare tu in cellula.
Vedi, 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 v
We have a great pleasure of welcoming Maestro Ricardo Muti back to Chicago in January of 2012, our first chance to see him back here in his dressing room at Orchestra Hall with 3 weeks of concerts jam-packed with new works to Chicago and old works, et cetera, et cetera. But first, I have to ask you, Maestro, have you won any awards yet in 2012?
No.
Okay. So it's more focus on the music then.
Si.
You're coming from Montpellier. And what goes on in Montpellier, France?
Montpellier is a beautiful city in the south of France on the Mediterranean, 2 hours from the Spanish border. Mm-hmm. It is a very old city, and they have a festival, musical festival, and a beautiful theater. I was invited to conduct the Verdi Requiem there. And I spent 1 week very beautiful, very rewarding, because the orchestra, I had the chorus of Riga. Uh-huh. That joined was joining the chorus of Montpellier National Symphony Orchestra. And the Riga chorus is one of the excellent chorus in Europe. And I was very impressed by the city, because it's very old. And for example, the university has the Faculty of Medicine that goes back to the 12th century.
Wow.
And the buildings are very old buildings. And coming from Italy, where everything is old, I was very pleased to spend 1 week there before coming to the new world.
It must be nice, even when, or perhaps even especially when, you have a strong regular association, such as a music directorship or your own youth orchestra or other regular affiliations, to work for a week with a group that you don't always work with. Maybe there's a chance to communicate in some different ways, or...
No, the communication is the same. My system to work when I work with the Chicago Symphony or Berlin Philharmonic or Vienna Philharmonic or an orchestra that is not first class or a group of young musicians is absolutely the same. Because when you work with an orchestra that needs more attention, it's even more interesting for you, because we right. learn teaching. We learn right. many things. I always said that in my artistic life, I learned not only from my teachers, and I had the opportunity to have great teachers, but I learned a lot from the musicians of the different orchestras. And many times, like. When you hear a performance not from a great conductor but from a modest conductor, sometime you realize that the entire performance maybe is not interesting, but in that not interesting performance, mm-hmm. you have just a moment, a spot that by accident or by I don't know why reveals you something that other great performances, have not given you this opportunity. In fact, Kleiber, Carlos Kleiber, always said that he was interested in listening to all kind of performances, because many times from performances conducted by not great conductors, he could realize details or right. something unknown.
Yeah. Another variation on that is that people wrongly, I'm sure you will remind us and explain for us, people have ideas that certain pieces are automatic or in some ways conduct themselves. There was a period, particularly as stereo recording, high fidelity recording became more popular, more sophisticated, that one of the pieces that just became a sonic showcase was Carmina Burana, which you tell us we pronounce incorrectly, and we take too limited a view to go back to that 70s, 80s, 60s period where we have a feeling that maybe this is a, in the theater they call a party piece or something. But you have a much more involved connection and understanding of this piece.
But this is a piece that is very dear to me for many reasons. First, I have conducted this piece many, many times all over the world. But there is one performance that I have in my memory that's very special. It's a performance that I did with the Berlin Philharmonic in 1980. And Karl Orff came, he was ill, his health was fragile, but he came to Munich for that occasion. And I remember that was a very special evening. The Berlin Philharmonic and the chorus, they gave everything, and was a performance so touching that at the end Karl Orff wrote to me. He sent a picture with an inscription that I still have, and he said he wrote to Riccardo Muti for this performance with the Berlin Philharmonic in 1980, a performance that I consider my second premiere. Mm. And in fact, then I read a few months later in a magazine of the Karl Orff Society that Orff, going back to Munich after this performance in Berlin, he changed some dynamics and some metronomes according to the performance that I had.
In particular parts of the piece? Or?
I've not seen which corrections he made, but this I read in the Karl Orff Society magazine. Right. Then I met Karl Orff many other times. And in fact, in my score of Carmina Burana, I still have a little card that he wrote to me after a performance. He wrote "Bravo, bravissimo" in Italian. And I think that he liked the fact that my approach to this piece, and I'm sure that I'm not the only one, is a very tragic one. Because the piece reflects the atmosphere and the philosophy of the medieval time, no, the dark eras. And these students of the medieval universities, they had the sense of death and the sense of the life that is not generous to mankind. And in fact, at the beginning, Semper Crescens are the Crescens, vita detestabilis. The first words are very strong. Our life that we should detest. No, I don't know in English.
Yes, detest, that's exactly it.
That goes up, goes down, like the moon. We cannot be sure of. And even love is conceived in the piece in a very erotic way, but it's not a superficial erotism. It's a sort of way of escaping from the tragedy of life. And in fact, I remember that the first time that I made this recording in London many years ago, with Arlene Auger singing the part of this. It was a great American
very beloved here.
Soprano.
Died too young.
And I remember that I had to work to convince that this music is not an easy music. The tam-pam-pam-pam, tam-pam-pam, that in Italy has been used also for many, many commercials. And I really become very upset about this because it's like Traviata when you hear the beginning of the opera, the famous Brindisi, that many times is used for happy situations with some singers that are hand by hand with a glass of champagne or prosecco, depends on the economical possibility. And then you have this Brindisi that should have in a way, and this is very difficult to realize, a sense of death. Mm-hmm. Because Violetta, in the beginning of the opera, she knows that she's right. going to die, that is the end of her. And also in that case, she doesn't want to love because there is no time. Also, she has been disappointed by life, as I said. So the Brindisi of Traviata is not in a... Of course, this is the theme and this is a valzer,
right.
but should have a color, an atmosphere that should carry something tragic inside, like Carmina Burana.
And you think also that if this tragic side is illuminated, because it is there in the score and in the texts with the Orff, that a more serious case is made for the music, even to people who don't pay attention to these commercials, but who just think, oh, this is a popular piece. It's
yeah.
not a piece of depth.
Sì, generally. Of course, when you hear a motive, a theme, a tema, for many times, and the tema is connected with a certain light commercials, immediately you think that this mm-hmm. is a light music. But the entire concept of the piece is very complex, because also you must realize that Orff used rhythms and instruments, timbres and harmonic situations that wanted to recreate also a certain ancient mm-hmm. World, sort of tribale, no?
Right.
Very primitive.
Right.
So I don't see anything in the piece that should bring the public to a big laugh.
Mm-hmm.
To smile, yes. Mm-hmm. We have to consider that these are young students, like the students today, no, they play, they make jokes, etc., etc. But there is always around them a certain thought that about what will be the future.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to work in my life? Everything, or will it be a disaster?
There's a certain anxiety.
Un'ansietà, sì, yeah. An anxiety.
Orff also worked for many years with some of these similar techniques to develop educational tools for children and to develop ideas for acquainting children with rhythm and instruments and so on. Did you ever have any look at any of this or any connection with the Orff method?
No, I know. I read something that mm-hmm. he was very much involved in this, but I didn't get close.
Mm-hmm. The next week, you have another work that some would say they played a lot on their stereo system in college or something, the Franck Symphony. And I'm wondering if you can say something about you and this work.
One time, this symphony was very popular and you could see in programs around the world in the big... conducted by great conductors, etc., etc., then has disappeared a little bit. I don't know why. The first time I heard this symphony was in the early 60s, actually in the late 50s mm-hmm. in San Carlo in Napoli. I was a student, and it was Charles Munch that conducted the symphony. And then Antonino Votto, my teacher, conducted the symphony in La Scala at the beginning of the 60s. And at that time, all these conductors, Votto, Gavazzeni, because of the Toscanini school, they used to conduct, to love this piece. That is very unusual in the history of the symphonies, because it's a symphony that tells you immediately that the composer is an organist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The generally the low part of the orchestra, all the bassi, violoncelli, contrabassi, fagotti, etc., they remind you that he was an organist, like he's using the pedals with
right.
his feet.
In a way, they're replicating those parts.
Sì, sì. And the symphony has a forma the form of symphony is very different from the classical symphony, not only because it's not in four movements, but it's in three movements, even if the second movement can brings elements that can belong also to a scherzo, but it is in three movements. But also the symphony has here and there moments that seem more like an improvisation than like a development of a classical symphony. So maybe all this all these things have today alienated the conductors. They are more interested in the classical symphonies or symphonies like Bruckner, etc., etc. But I think that, for example, Gounod, we know that Gounod hated this symphony, and he thought that the use of the English horn, especially in the second movement, that was more for an opera than for a symphony. This is very strange, because before Berlioz, for example, or other composers have used the, but to give this big theme to an English horn made Gounod very, very, very upset. Anyway, I like this symphony because is in any case it's a great piece, and also here, for example, the last movement, also this can sound like a stupid theme, or maybe if you think the preparation, then the personality and the fact that he was a great performer at the organ, so if you play this theme in a very serious way, then the effect will be completely different.
It sounds with both of these pieces that, in a way, you're hoping to give us old bottles with fresh wine in them. That
si, speriamo. Yeah. I remember that when I did in Philadelphia this this piece, I didn't know, and I recorded with the Philadelphia Orchestra. I remember that I didn't know that Ormandy used to do this symphony very often.
Yes.
And was very often played between the season, the winter season, and the summer concerts. But I remember that was a member of the orchestra, Armand Di Camillo, and he was the family came from Abruzzo to Italy, and it was the terror of the conductors because he had ears that he could hear everything. Mm-hmm. And and when was a wrong note in the orchestra, he would point the player before the conductor had noticed the wrong note. So it was a sort of terror. It was very short man, but it was a violinist, the second violinist. So he was a great friend of mine. And I remember that I didn't know the symphony had been played so many, 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 many times that when I started then I heard Di Camillo say, "That's enough." And I remained like stupid because I thought that that I had done these three bars so badly that was enough. But then they explained me why.
It revived memories for them that they wanted to rest for a while. When we last spoke briefly by phone, when we had the opportunity to call you to present you with your last award of 2011 from WFMT as the Artist of the Year.
It was a great honor, too.
It was an honor for us that you've accepted this, and we'll be getting you the actual award this week. But you were beginning your studies of the two brand-new works that you're going to share with the audiences and with the orchestra, and those are the pieces by the Mead composers in residence, Mason Bates and Anna Klein. And I'm sure you're still working on them because you have another week or two, but I'm curious if you can give us some sense now of what you've found.
First, I must say that I'm pleased about the result of the two scores. Also because when I invited Mason Bates and Anna Klein to become composers in residence, I had not invited them because somebody had spoken to me about their qualities. So, but looking at different scores, I was impressed by the way these two musicians that I didn't know were writing their music. So I selected these two composers on the basis of the scores that I was examining. I commissioned these two pieces for these 2 weeks, and I will bring these works to California.
Right.
Also, and that is a statement also because I believe in these works are difficult and very complicated, very complex works. But the fact that I will bring to California means that I am proud of these two musicians.
And we should say they're not just fanfares or overtures. They are works. They're not 6 minute, 8 minute.
No. So 20, over 20 minutes of music. And the first piece, the Mason Bates piece, Alternative Energy, reflects very much his way of writing music that is a combination of the classical studies and the knowledge that he has of the contemporary music, plus the use of the electronic music. That is very interesting for me because I come to know sounds and that there are completely new for me. Then the use of the rhythms, different rhythms that reflect very much the American culture of Mason Bates. So many times you have elements that belong to the world of jazz. And also there are moments of great poetry, especially the two elements are the rhythmical element and the poetic element that come from the use of soft, tender timbres in the orchestra. The other piece, the Anna Klein piece, is a completely different work. The name of the title is Night Ferry. So the program has at the beginning the Rosamunde of Schubert and the second part the Great Symphony of Schubert. So the piece of Anna Klein can seem a piece that has nothing to do with the rest of the program. But there is a connection, not in the way like when Berio used to create the world of Rossini or world of Corelli or world of
or
classical
Schubert.
Or Schubert.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, the connection with Schubert is about his mental illness. So Schubert had an illness that gave him created situations that went from dramatic moments, tragic moments, to moments of depression or moments of hope, and so from darkness to light. So the Night Ferry is a voyage in the mind of a sick mind. And she has written a very dramatic piece that ends in a very quiet and tranquil way. But I want to underline this fact that the connection with Schubert is not with the style of Schubert, but with to create a state of mind that most of the time afflicted the life of Franz Schubert.
What I hear in these brief looks at all four of these pieces of Orff, of Franck, of Mason Bates, of Anna Klein, is the seriousness that you bring to a score. Because you could just play these pieces. The tickets would still get sold. But it's very clear you're taking the time with these scores that you would take with any other, maybe even with the new scores, you're taking more time. And if the work is worth studying, you're going to study it and you're going to analyze it and then discuss it also with the composer.
Yes, in
but
fact,
it's not just propaganda.
In fact, no. In fact, I have spent a lot of time working on this piece, not only because are complex pieces, and if you don't know well, you cannot conduct. Then, but also with the contemporary music, I don't follow the idea of just beating the time in 5, in 7, in 3, etc., etc., but actually studying note by note to try to understand and to serve the composer as much as I can. And the same thing I did, I've done with this piece that we do in one of the first concert, this Smirnov, this
Space Odyssey.
Actually, I was studying the other day when I came in the airplane, and the hostess of the Lufthansa looked at the title, and she was a little bit scared that, that I was studying Space Odyssey in the air.
But you landed, and she landed also.
And also the idea of doing the Pacific 231 before alternative energy.
Right. No,
that makes a certain sense because it's a piece of energy, the Honegger, and goes very well with Mason Bates. So I think that the programs are very have the possibility to the public for the public to go to the beauty and the innocence and the depth of Schubert to the classical romantic world of Franck to this experience of two contemporary composers completely different one from the other. Also this piece, this Russian piece that is not very long, is about 8-10 minutes, but
how did this piece come to you?
I was looking at different scores of contemporary Russian composers, and this is a piece that we will perform in April when we go to Moscow and to St. Petersburg. And because Smirnov is a living composer, I want to. It's a sort of homage to the Russian composer.
I'm wondering if we could say just a little something, not necessarily about the specific pieces, but about your connection with Schubert. I get the sense from listening to not only the Schubert that you play, but some other pieces where you find a Schubertian quality, this wonderful Liszt poem that you have played frequently, From the Cradle to the Grave, some other works. And I'm wondering if your connection with Schubert comes also from your having studied piano and still working at the piano, or if it's viewing him more as an orchestral composer first.
No, it's a very interesting because at the beginning of my career, of course, my first piece that I conducted when I was a student in Napoli, I started to move the arm for the first experiences. I did the Unfinished Symphony in one of the in my first program, and in one of my first concerts, still a student, I did the Schubert Fifth Symphony. So it was always a composer that I found very, very close to me, also because of the being pianist, all the improvisi, impromptu, etc., etc. But I must say that when I did the first time the Great Symphony, it was my first symphony that I conducted in with the Vienna Philharmonic many, many, many years ago. The chairman of the orchestra, the president of the orchestra, Vernon Raisel, now he's in pension, but still alive, and is a great friend of mine, has became a great friend. After the Great Symphony, the Viennese were so impressed that they asked me to record the entire cycle of the Schubert symphonies with them. And I think, if I'm not wrong, that still now I am the only conductor that has conducted the entire cycle of the symphonies. Other conductors have recorded three symphonies, two symphonies, four symphonies, but the entire cycle, I think that I'm still the only one. And doing then this cycle, these symphonies, and I've conducted these symphonies with them around the world in many places. The Viennese, the Wiener Philharmoniker, they came to me in 1991, 1992, and they said, Maestro, from the way you conduct Schubert, we think that you should conduct a New Year's concert. And because they said, of course, Schubert is the door to the Strauss of the Walzer of Lanner, all this. And I said, but I have no idea of this music. Of course, we know the themes, etc., etc.
Blue Danube. Yeah.
And then I said, but a Neapolitan. That 1st of January is on the podium of the Musikverein conducting the New Year's concert. I don't think that doesn't sound right to me. But in that moment I was wrong because Napoli at that time was the real capital of a kingdom, of the kingdom of the Two Sicilies, and the connection between Napoli and Vienna was much tighter than the connection of any other Italian city, because Milano was part of the empire, the Austrian empire, no?
Right.
But Napoli was the capital that could speak face to face to Vienna, and then the Maria Carolina was the queen of Napoli in the second part of the 18th century, and she was the daughter of Maria Teresa. Actually, Maria Teresa made a lot of mistakes because she tried to give great positions to the daughters, and one lost the head in Paris, and the other one ended in a convent. So, in Napoli, and so then I accepted because of Schubert.
Right.
I accepted the first New Year's concert, and then I did in 93, 97, 2000, 2004, four times the New Year's concert. Now it's enough, because I think that four times is a good number.
Yes, I know you also were very close with Richter, with Vjeleslav Richter. I get the impression that he and Carlos Kleiber in some ways were something in between soulmates and mentors. I mean, the age isn't quite there for generations, but there's a special connection there. And I'm curious if you ever discussed Schubert with Richter or
with Carlos. No, but with Richter, if Carlos conducted, he knew everything.
Yes,
all the. Because he always said, I have a small repertoire, but he knew all the music. He conducted few scores, but his knowledge was immense. Right. But he used to conduct the Third Symphony, the one that I do now, and the unfinished. I don't know if he did the Tragic, but the number four. But certainly these two symphonies he conducted. But with him, I didn't speak about. Maybe because even being friends,
we had
different ways, and we prefer to save the friendship.
Right. No, I understand.
But
that.
With Richter, yes, because the world of Schubert was very, very dear to Richter, like it's very dear to Radulupu. With him also I have spoken, because Radulupu is a great interpreter of Schubert, like Mori Perhaia. You know, I think that of course the way I do Schubert reflects not only my knowledge after more than 40 years of the Austrian world and the Austrian culture, but also I cannot forget the influence that the Italian music had on Schubert. And in fact, the presence of Salieri is not to be forgotten.
Right. And by looking at and hearing the piano side, I think in some ways maybe we can sometimes even see that line more directly.
I mean, also, we're speaking about the Italian influence. The last movement of the Third Symphony is a typical tarantella of the south of Italy that doesn't come from.
Have you been able to find the Neapolitan connections to Mason Bates and Anna Klein yet, or are you still investigating?
But, so I think the Neapolitan connection is in everything.
Yes. Well, Maestro, thank you for sharing the Neapolitan connection with the Chicago connection, which I think we, as time goes along, scholars will look for the Chicago connection and influence on Muti over
into the
century.
We'll see. Grazie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Grazie. Thank you.
Music that we heard this evening came from the third section, Cour d'Amour, from Karl Orff's Carmina Burana. We heard sections featuring the late, great American soprano Arlene Auger. We also heard from baritone John van Kesteren, the Philharmonia Chorus, the South End Boys Choir, and the Philharmonia Orchestra under the direction of Riccardo Muti. I believe that recording was made back in 1980, so very much connected with the period that Maestro Muti was talking about with us when he met with Karl Orff in Germany. We also heard music of Schubert from Rosamunde, not the same music that you will be hearing in the third week of Maestro Muti's winter residency. No need to be repetitious here. But the ninth section of incidental music for that work, the second ballet marked Andantino, this from a 1993 recording with the Vienna Philharmonic, but recorded at the Konzerthaus around the ring from the Musikverein. We'd like to thank Eric Arunis for recording this interview with Riccardo Muti on Sunday evening, January 22nd, 2012, in the director's studio in the basement of Orchestra Hall. We'd like to thank Rochelle Rowe, Rachel Alexander, welcome back, Mama, and Emily Master for helping us to arrange and conduct this interview. We'd like to thank Matt DeStefano for putting it all together and making this program sound great. We'd like to thank our funders, Alphawood Foundation, Richard and Susan Kiphart, and other friends of this program. Let us know what you thought about this or any of our other programs. You can click the Chime In feature at WFMT.com, or you can drop us a line, Rentap, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.